This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Thursday, June 14th, 2018. Good afternoon. Happy Flag Day. Welcome to the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We'll see times of sun and clouds this afternoon, a high of 81, 75 at the lakefront. Right now, 79 degrees in the outlying areas and 71 downtown.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. The Dow doing its best impersonation of a roller coaster at Great America during the morning hours, going up and down, and following the progress from Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
That's right, Rob. Right now, the Dow is down about 30 points or a tenth of a percent. The NASDAQ wasn't able to hang on to gains yesterday, but today it is trying for record number 20 here in 2018. The number to beat is 7,704. Right now, the NASDAQ composites at 7,751. So clearly doing the job with a gain of 55 points or three quarters of a percent. S&P up 5 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index gaining a quarter percent. U.S. retail sales rose in May by the most in 6 months. The value of overall sales advanced 0.8% from the prior month. That was double the estimate of economists and follows an upwardly revised 0.4% gain for April. All of that from the Commerce Department. As for the labor market, the latest reading on new unemployment claims find they unexpectedly slid instead of rising last week, down 4,000 to 218,000. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we are taking a look at Chicago's futuristic transit system between O'Hare and the Loop, where that's just going to be approved, apparently. And we're going to examine the Fed statement on the economy.
And then this Comcast Fox deal could be the latest in the mega media merger mania that's underway. We'll talk about that and more coming up on the Noon Business Hour.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A lot of conversation today about comments made by the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell after yesterday's announcement of a 0.25% interest rate increase. And that's coming up in our next segment. Right now, though, the entrepreneur Elon Musk's Boring Company, B-O-R-I-N-G, has been chosen to build a high-speed transit system between downtown and O'Hare. Let's discuss this massive project with Sarah McBride, reporter at Bloomberg in San Francisco. Tell us about this plan, Sarah.
Well, it's kind of an exciting plan for people who live in Chicago. It's a way to get to the airport in well under 20 minutes, using around 12. And I gather that that's sometimes a 40-minute ride in traffic right now. And it's exciting because it's using a somewhat futuristic transportation mode that he's calling Loop. It's autonomous driving pods that will work on a type of electric ski system.
Are they doing this anywhere else?
Well, originally Musk had talked about very ambitious plans, something called a Hyperloop. But this isn't quite a Hyperloop. It's sort of a scaled-down version. So originally he had plans to do this in all kinds of places, but because the vision he originally laid out is very complicated and perhaps more suitable for longer distances, he's having to start kind of small here. So this is not quite a Hyperloop because it won't be in a vacuum and it'll go at slower speeds than this Hyperloop, but it's still impressive. It'll reach speeds over 100 miles an hour, and we'll use this new ski-based technology.
Now, some of the cost estimates that have been thrown around by the Boring Company saying they will build this 17-mile tunnel from downtown Chicago to O'Hare for about $1 billion. which is, by comparison, the Big Dig in Boston, which was only a mile and a half to put a freeway underground, cost $22 billion. Now, they say the proprietary technology of the boring company, their tunneling technology, will make it cheaper and more cost-effective. Is that true? I mean, was there any special revelations in that special that demonstration tunnel the boring company dug in Los Angeles?
Okay. Well, first, let's just step back and think about Elon Musk for a second. He promises big, and he usually delivers, but it always takes way longer than he says and costs more than he says. So I think we can expect the same here. That said, the tunnel digging is innovative in that it's a much... I don't know if you can really call this innovative. It's a much narrow. He's figured out a way to build this train in a much smaller tunnel than it would typically take. So that alone, and I've checked that with engineers, that does reduce costs considerably. He also says his tunnel boring machines are faster than traditional tunnel boring machines, but they plan to increase the speed on them. And really, that's impossible to verify unless you've been down in their test tunnels that they've been digging in Hawthorne, California, and had a chance to measure it all yourself, which I certainly have not had the opportunity to do.
A few days ago, we had the news that they were laying off people. They're going to be laying off people at the Tesla locations.
Right.
So what does that have to do with the cost of building this?
Yeah, you know, actually, they're totally separate companies. So the Tesla electric car company is a publicly traded company. Boring Co. is its own separate company. It's privately held. He's raised money for it in super creative ways. On Saturday, I was down at the Boring Company, which is headquartered in trailers in a parking lot right by one of his other companies, SpaceX. And he was handing out, or not he, but his staff were handing out flamethrowers that people had paid $500 a pop for, and he raised $10 million that way for Boring Company. And I met a couple that had come all the way from Chicago to pick one up. So he's very clever about raising money and just thinking really creatively about how to get things done.
Well, thank you very much. Sarah McBride is a reporter with Bloomberg based in San Francisco. The unveiling, or at least the news conference announcing this deal, is later today. And if you're a betting person, chances are you're going to hear Daniel Burnham's "Make No Small Plans" quote during the media event later today. Coming up next, expert analysis of the latest rate move by the Fed and comments by its chairman.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Fed raises interest rates as Chairman Jerome Powell continues his quest to remake the image of America's central bank. We welcome back David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors based in Denver, Colorado, and author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, welcome back to the show. What's your take on how the announcement and events went down yesterday? What's your analysis?
Well, it's interesting. No surprise on that rate hike, which brings us up to 1.75 to 2.0% on the federal funds rate target. But I think we've got some good insight into our new Fed chairman, Jerome Powell. He's very much his own man. He's a straight talker, and I really like the fact he put all the policy pronouncements on one page. That was the discipline my chairman gave to me when I used to write our weekly letter. If you can't say it in one page, don't try. He was very impressive in that respect. He looks like he's going to also stay in his own lane in terms of policy. He knows where he's going. He knows why he's going there. I like that kind of talk. He's really in the process of normalizing right now. He's trying to raise rates a quarter point of at each policy session, essentially, at least the quarterly policy sessions, until he gets to a normal level of the funds rate, which he thinks is around 2.9%. We're going to hit that next year, but what's interesting is he's going beyond that in his own forecast in the second half of next year into restrictive territory, and I don't think the markets are ready for that.
You talk about Jerome Powell compared to his predecessors, but would it also be, I mean, aren't they a Fed chair? Isn't he or she kind of defined by the circumstances surrounding their appointment? I mean, for example, about 10 years ago, Ben Bernanke's job was to basically keep the economy from collapsing. And now Jerome Powell is in a situation where he's trying to keep it from overheating. So it seems like they have two different mission statements, you know, Jerome Powell compared to his predecessors.
Excellent point. You're absolutely on the money with that point. It is a different set of circumstances, and we have to remember we had a 3.8% unemployment rate, the lowest in nearly two decades, and in fact, Powell's forecasting 3.5, even lower. So we've got a hot economy. I think Powell called it the economy is doing very well, and it is a much different circumstance, so it's logical he would go into restricted territory. But my main point is he is the kind of person that's going to stay on course. In the question and answer session, the trade talks were raised, and he just shook it off. He said, that's the administration's problem. My problem is maximum employment and stable prices. Let the administration worry about that. He said he saw no evidence trade was hurting his economic forecast, at least as yet.
Janet Yellen
would be pulled off course by Italy or other issues. I don't think Powell is going to be.
David, two former Fed chairmen are also straight talking. Ben Bernanke is warning that the economy could go off the cliff. And Alan Greenspan is worried about overly optimistic sites. And he's also a warning about stagflation, where inflation goes up and growth goes down.
Yeah, I heard that interview. The point I would make is, for now at least, Powell's on a good course. The economy's on a good course. I think as we get out into late 2020, there is going to be an issue here. If we cannot get enough business investment from the corporate tax cuts to start to increase productivity, we're going to get inflation from this economy, and that's going to force Powell to do a lot more in terms of restraint than he's planning to do right now. So there could be some bumps in the road, but I just like the fact he lays it out, talks straight about it, and does it in a relatively few words.
Well, thank you very much for the insights, as always. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver.
WBBM News Time is 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets now. Here's Lisa Peretti.
Chris, the Dow is off just 5 points now, and the NASDAQ is higher by 64 points, or 0.8%, at a record high 7,760, S&P adding 8 points, the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining 0.3%, crude futures little change near $66.62. As for grains, let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Grains have been down all day on worries about tariffs to be put on China or not, creating a trade war. At the moment, we have December corn down 9.75 at 3.87 and a quarter. It was down 12. Beans were down 12. Also, they now for November are down 7.25 at 9.51.5. And wheat was down 18 plus. Wheat for July down 12 at 5.04.5. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are mixed at this hour. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Technology Thursday, the expected AT&T-Time Warner merger sets the scene for another huge deal that will affect the distribution of entertainment.
The price of gas is up about 30% compared to a year ago. We'll look at the potential impact of an upcoming meeting involving the top oil-producing countries.
And the city of Chicago picks an Elon Musk company to build a new transportation system that would make the trip from downtown to O'Hare in about 12 minutes.
President Trump says he won't settle a lawsuit alleging that his foundation engaged in a pattern of illegal spending.
WBBM Market Watch, the Dow Industrials down 6 points, the NASDAQ up 67, and the S&P 500 up 9.
79 degrees in Chicago, going up to 83, times of sun and clouds. The noon business hour continues, presented by Old Second Bank.
And we're talking with Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Off Management in Greenwich, Connecticut. Welcome back to the noon business hour, Vahan. The stock market, not the Dow, but the NASDAQ is having a great run.
Yeah, that's right. Technology stocks have been doing pretty well. But I think the bigger story, though, is how well the stock market's been holding up, given what I consider to be a lot of uncertainties. You know, for example, the G7 meeting that was recently held was pretty much a bust. I was expecting to see the market perform very badly on Monday, and I came in and the market held up very well. It's almost as if investors have decided that international trade doesn't really. Net exports, for example, that's in addition to GDP. We've been running a trade deficit for a while, and of course President Trump is trying to flip that and create a trade surplus. But that won't necessarily add to GDP if it also results in a reduction in personal consumption expenditures and investments, which is what could happen if both exports and imports fall.
So with all that in mind, what's your advice to investors?
Well, my advice always is to diversify and to rebalance. And as a result, you know, one sector that I think has been out of favor lately and I think could be a good time to invest in is financials. I've been adding to those positions primarily using an ETF. Today, I bought some more of the XLF, for example. I was looking at the Fed report, actually. And what I'm seeing is that the Fed is actually projecting some pretty aggressive increases in the Fed funds rate, and that should certainly be good news for the banks over the long term. But one thing that does concern me about the report is that they're actually projecting a decline in real GDP growth, while at the same time they're projecting a fairly large increase in the Fed funds rate, and this seems a little inconsistent to me.
Well, what are some of your, let's continue on this. What are some of your takeaways from the Fed's comments yesterday?
Well, you know, first of all, I think a good point is should the Fed be holding a conference, a press conference, after every meeting? Of course, recently they've been doing it after only certain meetings, and in the past they didn't hold any press conferences at all. And yesterday we heard that the Fed wants to now institute a policy of having a press conference after every meeting. I'm not sure that that's a good thing. I think it opens up the possibility of the Fed chairman possibly saying something that could really rock the markets. I'm perfectly comfortable with reading the statement and looking at all the data myself. So the Fed is trying to become more transparent, and of course more transparency in general is good for the markets and good for investors, but I think they might be going a little overboard with this.
Well, yeah, you really have to be a master of message discipline because, as you said, a single misspeak or some sort of brain freeze could cause you know, billions of dollars of upheaval.
Yeah, that's right. But on the other hand, I think you know, a press conference could also be very useful when you see something in the statement that just on the surface doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Like, I'd really like to have a better understanding of, you know, why is it that the Fed thinks that the Fed funds rate is going to go up fairly aggressively over the course of the next couple of years while GDP is going to fall.
What is what do you think is the reasoning behind their predictions on the funds rate versus the growth of the economy at large? Because some of those numbers they were spitting out yesterday were less than spectacular.
Well, of course, the Fed funds rate is more closely tied to their expectations on inflation, and they do expect inflation to hover around the 2% level. In fact, that's their target. And he, Jerome Powell, used the term symmetric, meaning that they would like to be concerned about inflation when it goes above 2%, but also when it goes below 2%. So they're really shooting for that 2% target. But I would say that I'm not convinced that it's really necessary to be raising the Fed funds rate so aggressively if you expect GDP to fall when you also expect inflation to remain fairly tame at 2%. So this is something I find very inconsistent, and I would really like to have more clarity on.
All right, Vahan, we'll be talking to you again soon, as we usually do. Nice to have you on again. Vahan Janjigian is Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management in Greenwich, Connecticut. Ahead, Technology Thursday, Comcast is looking to outbid Disney for the assets of 21st Century Fox.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday. The ruling that allowed the proposed merger of AT&T and Time Warner opens up huge possibilities about content distribution, including another potential mega deal that's in the works. Let's look at the Disney-Comcast bidding war for 21st Century Fox and other possibilities with Tim Hanlon, who is the founder and CEO of the Vertaire Group based in Chicago. Tim, welcome back to the program. First off, let's clarify this bidding war for Disney, Comcast, and 21st Century Fox. Whoever lands 21st Century Fox, what do they get once the money changes hands and the keys and the email passwords?
Yeah, Rob, the assets we're talking about are the 20th Century Fox film and TV studios, which is obviously a very content-rich treasure trove. It's also, though, and interestingly, and you're going to get some interesting other bits here, about two dozen regional sports networks. So in New York, for example, the YES Network, a bunch of cable networks like FX and FXX, the channels from the Fox studio family, plus also a 30% ownership stake in the streaming service Hulu. But even more interestingly, there's some international assets, and I actually think that these are some of the more intriguing strategic pieces that both Disney and I think even more so Comcast covet. And those are significant ownership stakes in a pay television operator in Europe called Sky, and the most greenfield of all of them, Star, which is the largest television provider in India, which is a place that neither company has much exposure into.
So this seems like cable companies, Time Warner, for example, Comcast being another, looking for a future in the cord-cutting world.
Yeah, I mean, I think the original deal sort of was framed, I guess, from a Disney-Fox perspective, more as a sort of combination of powerhouse content assets. But when you dig under the surface, the reality is that, and we've sort of alluded to this over the last couple of days on the show, is this sort of intertwined, shall we say, between content and distribution assets, right? And it's clear that in this deal, the Fox, the 21st Century Fox assets that are up for grabs, there are interesting distribution elements here in this conversation, not just content.
And so this will create other possible mergers. What are some of them?
Well, I think anybody who's in the content space, I mean, the Discovery Networks, the CBS, with or without Viacom, if that sort of comes back together, you look at Verizon, which is probably the biggest, shall we call them naked or content devoid operation in terms of content distribution and pipes. There's a whole bunch of sort of deck chairs that are getting ready to start shuffling, shall we say.
And how does that affect me sitting there watching my TV?
Well, Chris, come on. How does it affect you? The ability to watch television and great shows and all that kind of stuff is certainly probably on the upside, the ease by which to find those shows. But it still remains to be seen whether all this consolidation will allow you to actually access that stuff more cheaply. Or more expensively. All remains to be seen.
Here's another question. How does this affect me, part two, as a content creator?
Me too.
On a on a traditional broadcast service that utilizes a tower, where does local TV and local radio wind up in all of these mega mergers? Because there are some TV station groups that get caught up in this as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Rob. Good question. I mean, the idea of a broadcast television, broadcast radio, those two are morphing. There are other deals that we've talked about in the past and will again in the future, whether it's Sinclair Tribune, et cetera. Let's put it this way. I think broadcasting is one part of a much bigger whirlpool of change and activity. Assets are going to be helpful and important, But to say that traditional broadcast television and radio are not going to come out unscathed, I think would be a little hard to say.
Well, thank you very much, Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Proterra Group based in Chicago. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, how an upcoming OPEC meeting could have an impact at the gas pump.
A wealth of information for managing your money. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Price of gas has come down a bit. We are talking with Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst at GasBuddy.com here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Patrick. What could be in the gathering of OPEC that could change things in terms of the price of gas here?
Well, Chris, there's a lot of expectations that OPEC will move to increase output. Of course, that increase would be led by perhaps Saudi Arabia and Russia. Of course, things have been tightening over the last couple of years when it comes to oil production. U.S. oil production is up, but faced with the previous cuts from OPEC and with the situation in Venezuela leading to less oil produced there, the market's grown very tight. And we have gotten some relief in the form of lower gas prices in the last couple of weeks as oil prices backtrack from $72 down to about $66. But, of course, gas prices still quite a bit higher than where they were last year at this point.
The gas prices compared to last summer?
That's right. Average price today in Chicago, $3.21 a gallon, whereas a year ago the metro area average was $2.57. So we're still paying a bit more, and that's because the price of oil due to those OPEC cuts. So if they decide at their June 22nd meeting to increase output, that could bring drivers more relief.
Well, Patrick, let's return to those thrilling days of yesteryear, 2012 and 2013, when you get to May or June, you could be looking at $5 for a gallon of gas at some station in the Chicago area. So things are still better than they were not too long ago.
That's right. I guess the glass is half full when it comes to perspective. Putting it all into context, as you say, it was just 2013 when Chicago's average price soared to $4.44 in the midst of the summer driving season. So there's a lot of complaining that oil prices have rallied. Of course, nobody likes paying the 60 cents a gallon more than we did last year. But all things considered, there is a lot of pressure on OPEC to make a move, even though oil prices are still far removed from where they were 3 to 4 years ago.
Has production patterns, have they changed so much that pending some sort of international crisis, it may be a while before we see those $4 or $5 a gallon days again?
Well, it certainly depends on exactly the way OPEC plays its cards this time around. I'm sure gone are the days of $25 barrel oil that we saw in early 2016. At the same point, OPEC would be well advised not to let oil prices drift back up to those triple digits. That certainly would incentivize Americans to trade any gas guzzlers and start looking at the Tesla Model 3 or some of the other more fuel-efficient vehicles out there. So they want to keep kind of a happy medium, and I think we're right in that territory right now. $65 to $70 a barrel, the sweet spot. You mentioned U.S. oil production. We're closing in on becoming the world's largest oil producer. That could happen in the next month or so.
Okay, Patrick, thanks for joining us today. Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst at GasBuddy.com here in Chicago. And you'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour, at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 1255. WBBM Business, sponsored by the Leapfrog Technology Group from Bloomberg. Here's Lisa Parenti.
Well, Rob, the Dow continues its rocky ways. Right now, it's down just 1 point at 25,200. NASDAQ is up 67 points, or almost 1%, at 7,763, a record. S&P up 8. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining 0.3%. Federal Reserve Chair Jay Powell talked up the economy yesterday while also talking about adding a fourth rate hike to the Fed's plans for this year. Not a popular idea with Wall Street, but Powell says the Fed's forecast is based on the economy strength. And as if to prove his point, today we get a new retail report on sales, and it shows 0.8% growth in May. That was far greater than expected. In fact, the most in 6 months. with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.